garments, or you know, you have clothes that are with tubes all around it, you know, to keep you either warm or cold, depending on what it is. I believe it was that. And they eventually sent the spacesuit back and worked on it. As far as I know, they've never had a problem like that again. So he's one of the other guys, and they have two others. Randy Bresnik is not the I got the two guys mixed up. Randy Bresnik, the commander, not the guy that had the one-year flight. That was Frank Rubio. He's the other guy. He's the guy that was on the space station for a year. But then another fellow, Andre Douglas, he's, from what I understand, he's never flown before, but I'm going to have to double-check on that. But these are the four for Artemis III. They're going to just do an orbital flight. They're actually going to do away with the second stage. They don't need that. Because they don't need all that propulsion if they're not heading to the moon. But they are going to use the first stage. And I believe a specially designed setup to take up the space of the second stage that's not being used. And to get into Earth orbit and hopefully meet up with the Blue Origin lander. What's happening is Blue Origin they're developing right now two landers to land on the moon. One is a crew vehicle and one is a cargo vehicle. First one that is supposed to fly is the cargo vehicle. That was supposed to fly at the end of the year. All bets are off now after what happened to the launch pad on Launch Complex 36 when that blew up. So they're going to have two moon landers. Now, the one that was going to land on the moon for cargo would have been the first one that they would have tested the new, brand new design of B7 engine, they call it. That's going to be a liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen engine. It would have been the first test of that. And it looks like they're not going to be able to test that for quite a while. This new mission that they're going to be orbiting the Earth with, they're going to be docking with, they're actually calling it there's the Mark 1 and the Mark 2. The Mark 1 is the cargo lander. Mark 2 is the crew lander. Now they're going to call it Mark 1.5. In other words, it's kind of like a blend of the two together. They're going to have living quarters where you could have four people live inside. But they're not going to have the engines attached because it's all not ready. So what they want to do is they might want to make sure the living quarters, everything is okay. To do that, they're gonna launch that on a separate rocket to meet up with the Orion spacecraft in orbit. So that's what I gotta say. So then they're gonna dock with this new version of this lander, you know, a cross between a lander and a crude lander. You know, because it doesn't have the actual capability of landing on a moon, but you do have the capability of putting a crew in it. It's going to dock with this. The crew is going to transfer over. And I haven't yet heard whether or not they're actually going to separate from one another and do what Apollo 9 did. Apollo 9, the land separated from the command module. And they tested everything. They redocked this thing. I'm not sure what they're going to do yet. As far as I know, they are going to transfer the crew. The crew is going to be able to hang out, you know, stretch their legs, and actually temporarily live inside that version of a half lander, half not lander. Wow, I mean they have changed everything. So now if that works, now you know they'll separate from one another, and they'll eventually deorbit this Blue Origin Mark 1.2 version of it, of the moon lander.
Paul, you disappeared again. Let me make sure somebody's hearing me before I go ask my question.
Yeah, I know, I disappeared. Sorry, guys. Anyway, hopefully, I'll try to shorten it, where they could dock with both of these human landing vehicles at some point. But with the Starship, they're going to wind up now, instead of docking to the side of it, they want to dock to the nose of it. Why do they want to dock to the nose of it? Because they want to be able to show that when they're attached, you can relight the engine of this big Starship and push the crew, you know, in a, you know, accelerate, actually be able to, you know, to be able to fly. They're thinking now, in the future, when they decide to go to the moon, that maybe it's a good idea to dock with the lander, which will be Starship, and at the nose you're going to have this docking of the Orion spacecraft in Earth orbit. They're thinking, well, okay, let's ignite the engine of the Starship, and both the vehicles are going to do a TLI, translunar injection, separate from Earth orbit, and fly all the way to the moon, and orbit the moon, and then eventually transfer the crew and go down to the moon, while Orion, two of the people stay on board. They eventually have the other two come back up, redock, and then again, the same thing. Reattach to Starship, face it in the direction of Earth, reignite the engines, and come home that way. I mean, you know, and this is all because Orion itself doesn't have the capability, the delta, the thrust to actually put itself into and out of lunar orbit. They need another vehicle. So all of this stuff is, you know, basically what I'm saying is, if you're looking for a lunar landing before 2028, you know, I want to put my money on that one anyway. Any comments? WS2M.
Bill, you're being B2BX with a comment, Paul.
Yeah, go ahead, Frank. You know, I keep reading this stuff, and I, you know, it's getting worse as time goes on. Back to you.
Anyway, we both seem to be back on, and hopefully Roy will find the problem with his connection. In any case, one of the stories I saw, I think it was on a NASA spaceflight discussion, a NASA spaceflight channel discussion a couple of years ago, was that one of the problems with Gateway, and not the only thing that ultimately got it canceled, I think, was that the contractors for SLS and Gateway did not apparently speak to one another, or did not communicate the proper dimensions and proper payload mass, etc. So they kept adding stuff to Gateway without checking whether it had to, whether or not it was going to have too much mass or be too big. I'm not sure which it was, to fly on SLS. And the two systems turned out to not be compatible, and that the Gateway would have to be redesigned. So I think that was one of the problems, but not the only one. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay, that makes sense. Maybe that's the reason that their final goal. See, originally the two modules that were actually built and complete, the power and propulsion element, that was one. You know, it's got a bunch of solar panels and fuel on board. They have the Hall thrusters, I think four of them. So they, that was complete. And then the habitat module, you know, where they're going to live, was complete. And originally they were supposed to go up and separately. So that has to do probably with what you're talking about. Then they decided, well, now this thing, I guess it's getting overweight. If what you're saying is what happened, they decided, well, I got a good idea. Let's put the two of them together before we launch it to the moon, instead of having them fly there separately and then docking in lunar orbit and having both of these modules work, you know, power and propulsion and a habitat. You know, let's put them both together. And the plan was, and I would imagine they already had a contract with us, with SpaceX, to launch it on a SpaceX heavy rocket. They're going to put both modules together, launch them, and have both go into orbit around the moon. I mean, that sounded doable. So I guess that was the plan. I know that was the final plan. Of course, that's been all, you know, all ripped up. Back to you, Frank.
Yeah, as I said, one of the problems certainly seems to be that Gateway just got too large to fit on the SLS. But I thought about that. Well, why don't they put it on Starship? But that would, you know, require a different fairing and different dimensions and stuff, so it wasn't easy to change for that either. Anyway, I am going to have to stand by for a while here. I may be back before the net closes. WB2BX, though.
Okay, Frank, thanks for the information, too. Yeah, I just wanted to bring up this other launch that... It's supposed to go up, I think it was launched today. I'll have to look to see if this thing ever went up. It was a launch from Japan. They call it the H-3 rocket. Japan has had the H-1 that's been retired, but then they had the H-2, and these are liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen rockets. They use the H-2 quite a bit. All their, like, scientific or military missions, they would launch on the H-2A. And then they had another one at the H-2B, which, I mean, you couldn't tell the difference by looking at it. And that one was specifically designed with NASA in mind. They launched 9 of these cargo vehicles to the International Space Stations over the years. Roughly every year, once a year, they would launch one of these things, and they had quite a bit of payload mass capability, and they bring up everything from science stuff to clothes to food to gigantic batteries that, you know, I mean, massive batteries that they would use for the power system on the space station. Many flights with those things on it. But as time went on, Japan wanted a less expensive rocket instead of having the two rockets, the H-2A, H-2B. They to consolidate that. So they built the H-3. And it's flown, I think, a half a dozen times or so, and I think two times they had a problem, but to work out this last launch that they had back in December, they couldn't get the payload to proper orbit. So So there was, they shut the H Street down for a while. They haven't had that kind of a launch. So sure enough, they plan on launching it. It might have gone up tonight or next Friday even. I'm not sure of the date. But I want to find out if that made it to orbit. There's no satellites on board. I think, they have a couple of CubeSats or something. But they just really want to make sure that the H3 is in good shape. Because it failed to get the last payload to orbit. H3 will, once that's operational, that will be really helpful for future NASA space station missions. They've already launched one on the H3, one new cargo vehicle. Cargo vehicles are called the HTV. And now the new version that they spent years developing is called the HTVX. And that was very successful. They launched it. Docked with the space station. They attached for months on end. They unloaded everything. Loaded up eventually with junk. It departed from the space station months ago. And then Japan used it as their own flying satellite. Just stayed in orbit, far away from the space station. And they used it for their own purposes, whatever that was. Science related, or I'm not sure what they needed it for, but eventually that deorbited recently, it was a couple of weeks ago, on purpose, and they don't recover it. But now with the new, with this new flight, if all goes well, future HTVX will be able to be launched. And they developed the thing with the idea of eventually sending it to the moon. It was going to be this gateway space station around the moon, like I talked about. So it needed to be resupplied. We had, a lot of people on board. SpaceX had a crew, cargo version that they were going to be sending to the moon. And then the other vehicle was the HTVX. From Japan. So I guess all that is being scrapped. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of these things that are being scrapped are brought back to life again in the future. Once they realize that, the hole they're digging themselves into, just for what, to have somebody get onto the moon before this administration is out. It seems like the wrong thing is driving driving them to get to the moon early, instead of going step by step, sticking with the plan. They're all over the board, it kind of reminds me of SpaceX, if this doesn't work, we'll try that. Well, eventually you're gonna have a big problem if you keep doing this, make sure you have a plan, develop it, test everything the best you can before you launch it. And don't watch it and say, oh, hey, look at that. That blew up. Oh, we'll fix that next time, I don't think that's going to fly with the American taxpayer. Any comments? All right. Talking about the International Space Station, they have an arm attached, 57-foot long arm, called Canada ROM 2, now it is in need of repair. So they plan on sending a crew up there very shortly to work on it. And the next crew that goes up, I believe, is going to be trained on it. Or they might even use the crew that's up there. The Canada ROM has been used for the last over 20 years to help build the space station. It's attached back in six or ten or something like that. And it's been active ever since. You know, a shuttle would come up, it would grab a hold of a module, put it into position, they'd find a way to attach it to it. And, you know, one after the other, you have 15 of these modules that are attached that make up the space station. It's like 15 rooms, you know, for that the astronauts could fly from one room to another. But it was all built using the Canadarm2, built by MDA. And they had a big responsibility, and it's worked great. They've done some repairs on it over the years, changed out the thing that grabs it, you know, they've done that before. But this time they were using it, and they noticed that they were getting a high voltage amperage reading from one of the joints. Canadarm2 has seven different joints, you know. We don't have that many on our arm, but they have seven different joints, seven different motors, and one of the ones on the wrist, part of the Canadarm2 is acting up. So they plan on actually replacing that unit, that part of the unit. And you say, well, now they're going to have to send up a new unit on another rocket. No, they have a storage platform all over the International Space Station outside. And they have all kinds of spares, all kinds of stuff. And you kind of like your basement, you know. You got tons of stuff down there, and you forget where it is until you need it. So they have a spare part, and they're eventually going to an EVA to part of the Canadarm2. And whatever happened to Canadarm1? Canadarm1 was the one that was attached to the shuttle in the early days. Of course, this is Canadarm3. And on making a Canadarm3, and that was going to be one that was going to be on the Gateway space station. Of course, like I said, that's been scratched for now. Don't be surprised if they bring all this stuff back to life. Any comments? I've gone through a whole long list here. Wonder if anybody has any questions or comments. If not, we're going to come to a close unless Roy is able to come back. This is WS2N for the SpaceNet Report for the TechNet.
Paul, do you hear me?
Yay. Did Amazon deliver a new radio for you? No, you sound good. Back to you, Roy.
Well, good to hear that I sound well. I didn't even reboot the computer. I shut down a couple of applications and reran them. They connected with the things that they connected with originally. I don't know, something went wonky and deteriorated as I was talking on the All-Star connection. But, you know, thankfully I hooked it all back on to the proper things, and I was able to hear you do the rest of the SpaceNet report.
Yeah, okay, that's great. Are you able to pinpoint the problem to avoid it happening again?
Of course not. It was probably something Windows related. It's some set of variables in one of the Windows program got misaligned or disconnected or something similar to that. Not anything that leaves a trail that you can say aha. Now, last week it was simply the firmware was broken. So there were some situations where it would cause my new mixer to just lock up. So I upgraded the firmware to this week's version, and the firmware didn't seem to fail. It's just the connections either from the mixer to the All-Star application or something close behind just kind of slowly degraded over time. Very weird. But Windows, it does that, unfortunately. It acts weird.
So far, so good. you know, all this stuff will drive me nuts. I let you know that I bought another phone. You know, I wanted to get a good phone, OLED screen, and it works great and all. But, you know, there's, you know, you transfer everything over, and there's things that are not transferred over, you know. What things go, are not right, you know, when you do it. So I've been using AI to work my way through a lot of these problems. You know, how do I get this back, or how do I get that back, or why isn't this working? And on and on for the last couple of days, and you know, I found it pretty good. Back to you, Ruth.
AC2GS. Well, I'm glad to hear it worked for you. Sometimes it does work. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's a little on the vague side. You know, that's why I tend to like my Apples. I kind of got stuck in that brand for phones a long time ago. I have everything in the cloud, and I just kind of download a copy of my configuration from another phone, and it just kind of takes over most of it. It doesn't say passwords, so you have to go through the slight trouble of reinstalling the password, sometimes the account number for certain things, but it's not too arduous, thankfully.
Oh, okay, very good. You know, I don't know if you heard Sam come on before. He said Middle Island tends to drop out if I'm long-winded. So, you know, there's issues here and issues there. I'll let them know tomorrow night when I think about it.
Yeah, I heard it. Maybe they need to tweak the timer in that repeater's control box.
Yeah. Hope you could do it from a computer, from a screen, where nobody has to go there and do it themselves.
Yeah, that would be good. I don't know. It depends on how they configured the control board. I know back in the old days, it seemed like Eric had to make house calls regularly to the repeaters.
Oh, yeah, he was great at that. And when he passed, he left a lot of mysteries that had to be solved, and they worked through them. And then since then, they've got new stuff, new computers, new everything. Middle Island came on, I think. I don't think Middle Island was on when Eric was here. But, you know, time marches on. So, okay, Roy, I've come to a grinding halt here. I don't know if you want to pick it up further or, you know, I'm just going to sit back and listen. Like I said, tomorrow night is ClubNet, the Club InfoNet, followed by George with the Swapper Shop. That's always followed by Radio Newsline. But for them, back to you, Roy. This is WS2N.
Yeah, I'll pick it up, and if no one's in the mood this late in the night, can I ask any questions or bring up any subjects, and I'll close it all up. Thanks, Paul, for all that you do. Thanks for helping me out with my technical problem here and filling the space. I appreciate it. This is AC2GS, Roy, and if anyone has any other questions, comments, topics that they didn't have a chance to talk about earlier tonight and want to do it now, feel free. Hit the bush to talk and tell me your piece.
HK, November 2, Salute Charlie.
Yes, John.
Yeah, Roy, I just wanted to tell you, you still have that off-frequency in your audio, as the other station precisely put it. So although you're much better, I just fear that something is going to drift back. I remember, with the old rigs, you know, that would happen with the tubes, et cetera. You know, you would drift off frequency after a while. And I just wanted to tell you, you're back. We can hear you. But, you know, the best way to put it is it does sound like you're slightly low frequency here.
Okay, I'm not using a radio. This is all Star. Talking into my computer. My computer is connected via All Star through the internet to the All Star node on I forget if it's Glen Oaks or the other repeater. There's no VFO involved on my end of this.
Yeah, understood. If it's unique to you, because all, I think myself and other stations I'm hearing, well, maybe it's somewhere in the Starlink that the this is taking place. That, you know, that's, you know, I'm not quite familiar with everything you got set up there, but just to give you as much information as possible.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, it's probably some kind of... inevitably, all these things that run on Windows operating systems, they need to be turned off and on regularly to just kind of blank the cache and refresh everything. So probably their next maintenance recycle will clean it up. We'll see.
Okay, very good, Greg. Glad to have you back.
Glad to be back, John. Okay, once again, this is AC2TS. If anyone has any questions, topics, comments, what have you, feel free. Otherwise, we'll just close things a little early. Okay, the audience has spoken. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Please tune in next Sunday when we will try this all over again and hopefully get it a little bit better. As always, I'd like to remind people of a couple of quotes on closing. Our own K2RIW Dick would end his technical nets with the advice to be kind to each other. That's always good advice. And I always like to remind people of good old Epictetus, it's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So keep your mind open to new ideas, but not so wide open that your brains fall out. Everyone, have a great week. Stay, be well, and if you possibly can, join us next Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we do this all over again. This is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra, and I will be clear after I say, Slava Ukraini.
73 is right.
That time complete. W2VL repeater.